Big Ben K. Wynn, we're throwing a vaccine party. Everyone's safe. We'll even do it over Zoom if the people aren't vaccinated. But what song are you playing today to kick off the WST vaccine party?
I'm going to play Little Duval, I'm Living My Best Life. I'm going to play the clean version, just so we don't get in any trouble. But if everyone is vaccinated and everyone's feeling good and things are turning around, that means that we all, baby, will be living our absolute best life.
All right, welcome back to WST Podcast, your West Coast source for sports. We got Ro Parrish in the house with us. Thank you for joining us. It's post All-Star Game weekend. The festivities that were that no one attended, unfortunately. So, Ro, I have to ask this. Start out. I heard All-Star.
Hold on, weekend. Before you get in, I've been waiting to say this for weeks. WST Podcast and Ro Parrish, we are now rocking with the best.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
So, Ro, I need you to give us your craziest All-Star weekend, NBA All-Star weekend story. Because I've listened to others that say it's just nuts. There's parties everywhere. And I'm sure there were some underground parties this year. And if you attended, you don't have to tell us. But give us your craziest All-Star weekend.
I'll just say this. First off, thank you for having me. It's always awesome to jump on and talk hoop. I love doing that. I did not attend anything for All-Star this past weekend here in the great city of Atlanta. I stayed out the way. I followed our great mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, and our great commissioner, Adam Silver. This is a television-only event, so I didn't attend anything. Everything I did was in the studio purposely. Stayed out the way. There were underground parties. I saw plenty of posts, but that's another story for somebody else to tell. As far as my most famous All-Star moments or greatest moments, they do involve parties. The first one I'll say was Los Angeles, 2011. We were at the W Hotel, and word was Nike was having their party there. So they started coming through, the Nike employees, and they started handing people gift certificates to exit. Thank you for coming, but we need to clear this area out. So here's a nice $100 Nike gift card for you to exit the premises immediately. So after Nike cleared everybody out, I came in with my big brother. Shouts out to Big Tigger, the legend from Rap City, who also DJed the All-Star game. That's my big bro. Came in with him, and pretty much anybody that was somebody was in there that night. You know, whether you're talking about your Neos of the world, you know, Nia Long, Dirk, all the All-Stars was there, but I knew it was legit when I looked up and I saw Kobe and LeBron at the party, because this was the official Nike party. So Spike Lee's in there, Q-Tip's DJing. It's just anybody that was in there. So it's around 2 a.m. We've consumed so many beverages that we're feeling right, and we're like, yo, we got to go to the restroom. But then out of nowhere, and I don't know if you've ever been to the W in Los Angeles.
I have. It's off of Sunset, like on the east side of L.A.
Correct. So there's a giant stairway, and it comes from the second floor, and it enters down into the bar area. So the music stops. We're looking around like, what's going on? And there's this lady, and she starts singing opera. And we're like, what is happening right now? After she sings her introduction, next thing you know, Kanye West comes out and does an impromptu concert. Well, obviously it wasn't impromptu for Nike, but for us it was. So she's harmonizing and she's singing the beginning part of Ham, if you remember Watch the Throne, Jay-Z and Kanye. She's singing that part, and then Kanye, like I mentioned, he comes down, he performs, and we're just like, yo, what the is going on right now? And he's going through all his records, and you know, all the celebrities turning to fans, and it was just one of those classic nights. That's my first awesome story. My second, and this was in 2011. My second one that I remember was, again, with Big Tigger, we go to the Jordan party. This is in New Orleans, and it was a little bit weird. The vibe wasn't really the same. The Jordan party was kind of relaxed. So I come on stage with Tig. You know, we're saying what's up to some people, and it's really, really, because the weekend performed, and it was kind of a chill vibe. Okay. After about an hour of us being in there, Drake shows up. So Drake comes on stage And, you know, he wants to turn the party up. He wasn't scheduled to be there, but he starts performing. And then he says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to pass out shots to everybody in here. Bartender, waitress, bring me shots. So next thing you know, there comes a tray of probably 20 to 30, maybe 50 shots. I can't remember. So I'm on stage and you know, Tig says, come on. And they hand me one of the trays. So next thing you know, we're at the stage and we're passing out shots to everybody in the crowd. And Drake says it's a little something, something. We all take shots. And at that point, I can't remember what. I know we performed, but everything was fuzzy after that. So those were some of my greatest all-star moments.
Wow. I mean, I thought you were going to tell a good story. Like, that was, like, tremendous. Like, those are the parties that, like, Ben and I always want to go to but don't have access to. Now I know why we can't get into those parties.
Yeah, I need to start singing opera. I need to get to the opera house or something. We'll bring some to those parties.
Yeah, it's always great to have a plug that knows someone and to have access to get into places to where not everybody can get into.
Right. Hey, Ro, just scrolling through your Twitter, I think we should bring up something that I don't want to get lost in the All-Star Weekend festivities because there's a lot. You said it's in Atlanta. I think you're a big proponent of HBCUs and just what they did for those. I saw, you know, Dion being at Jackson State. I've been watching the NCCU ESPN Plus thing, and this is a bit out of our jurisdiction because we're on the West Coast. All the HBCUs, you know, are in the South or the East Coast predominantly. But talk a little bit about that and kind of the overall feel in Atlanta from the weekend and just, you know, that being a big proponent of it or a big component of it.
Number one, I want to shout out to Adam Silver, Michelle Roberts, because – you know, without them really pushing this forward. Also, Chris Paul as well, who's been a major proponent of pushing the message of HBCUs out there. NBA generated over $3 million to distribute amongst HBCUs. That was just amazing. Now, unfortunately, I didn't attend an HBCU. I did consider it, but at the time, I really wanted to focus on a specific school. I had two schools in mind. That's another story for another day, but they were really focused on what I wanted to do in my career, and I knew that they were the best schools to go to. But just as far as the NBA, if I had a hat on, I'd tip it to them because at the end of the day, we know it's all about dollars and cents, and these HBCUs don't have the same resources to do some of the things that other colleges might be able to do. When I talk to Prime, he always talks about leveling the playing field, allowing, you know, people that might not have the opportunity to go to another type of institution to come and feel comfortable at HBCU, but also still have the access and the resources that you might find at a non-HBCU.
Yeah. And so, Ro, my parents both went to Shaw University in North Carolina. They proclaim it the jamming institution of the South. And if you remember Ronald Flip Murray for the Sonics, I told him, I'm like, Flip is from Shaw. And my mom and dad were going crazy. They're like, yeah, about time we got someone to the league. So it's great to see, you know, the NBA backing HBCUs and the things that they're doing, because a lot of these players go under the radar because they don't have the facilities, the resources to be on the same playing field as everyone else. And it's great just to see the NBA just highlight these great universities.
Absolutely. And initially, the plan was not to have an all-star game. Once they pulled away from Indiana and said, you know, we're going to not put the hold on the hotels, you know, it was up in the air at one point. And a lot of people that I spoke to, league personnel, was like, we're probably not going to have one. We'll still name all-stars. But it's just a situation to where everything lined up. It was pretty much the perfect storm. You have the pandemic taking place. You have Turner Sports, which is centrally located in Atlanta. It was a location that worked since our studios are here for so many other reasons. And then to couple that with the HBCUs that are here in Georgia, we have 10 in Georgia, 6 here in Atlanta. It just made too much sense to bring that all together.
Definitely. Now, if we get into the All-Star Weekend a little bit, or All-Star Day. Ro, the highlight every year, sometimes it's the low light, is the dunk contest. What'd you think of the dunk contest this year?
First off, shouts out to my man Chuck Milan, who is a legend in the game. You might not know his name. However, he is the man responsible for so many champions. He worked with all three dunkers yesterday. He worked with the past three champions. Look him up. Chuck Milan is awesome. I was disappointed from the standpoint from the judges. Now, you had some of the best judges ever. You know, dunk champions, Dominique statues outside the building that had the game in. But that first score for Cassius, that kind of set the stage for it could have been better because I felt like that score that they gave him for that first dunk, that kind of changed the trajectory. And I think it could have been even more epic. However, when he loses his momentum because his score is not so great, that kind of just, you know, made it take a turn for the worst. Overall, it was entertaining. But Cassius came out on his first dunk, knocked it down, and like you didn't get the reaction from the judges that you would think.
It probably hurt him that there was no fans too. Like, I understand why there's no fans. I support that. But if there was fans and more NBA players and celebrities jumping around courtside, it could have been a little different.
Going first too is never easy, right? They have nothing to compare it to. It's like, is that a good dunk? I don't know. And compared to what, right? Like, that hurt him.
Absolutely. And to his credit, me and Chuck have a good relationship. So I'm texting him during the week. I'm like, yo, I need some inside info. Who's winning? And he gave me the hint about Cassius. Now, Cassius is a two-way player. He hasn't had a dunk yet in the NBA game. He's had a three and he's had a layup. So I was like, are you sure he's ready for this stage? He's won dunk contests before, but being on the NBA stage is totally different. But I took his advice. I was like, okay, I'm going to pay attention. I'm putting my bid in. I'm putting my money on Cassius. So that's why I'm personally disappointed, because I knew that he had some extra dunks in the bag that we haven't seen before. But when you get that low score, you lose your momentum.
All right, sticking with the dunk contest, what's your favorite dunk contest of all time? You got 86, Spud Webb, who was there as a judge yesterday, 88, Jordan, 16, Anthony Gordon versus Levine, or outside of that?
Well, those are all awesome dunk contests that you've named. However, I think that you failed to mention what is arguably the greatest dunk contest of all time. Shouts out to Spud. Did it in my hometown of Dallas. He's from there. MJ 88 was special. Dominique feels like he got robbed. That back and forth between Levine and Gordon, that was awesome in Brooklyn. However, in the great city of Oakland, in the year 2000.
Oh, that's right.
where I was in the building, I was sitting way high in the rafters. I have never in life experienced a feeling of electricity the way I did that night when Vince Carter took the stage and shut it down.
He did that at the end.
He was like, it's over.
Well, he actually did that after the first dunk. I mean, and the crazy thing was, because the dunk contest is, to some people, lost its luster, but you're coming off the lockout. They didn't have the dunk contest the year before. So this was the first time we get to see the dunk contest back. Vince was a rookie in 99, no all-star game that year. So this is the first time we get to see him on this stage. So there was the buildup, there was the hype, and my man Vince lived up to every single expectation we all had. In fact, he more than exceeded the expectations of everybody. So that hands down, and I've been to plenty of dunk contests in my life, that one right there was awesome.
And looking back on it, now that you bring it up, Steve Francis and Tracy McGrady, they could have won the dunk contest another year, but that year it was Vince's.
And that's why I say that's the greatest one, because not only did Vince take it to another level, but just the level of competition that he had with him. Tracy McGrady is on record saying he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to even participate because he already knew what it was with Vince. However, you know, when he came out there, he still put on the show himself. Stevie Francis with those hops, you know, made everything look ridiculous, throwing the alley-oops off the ground. I mean, hands down, year 2000, Oakland, the best all-star dunk contest ever.
Now, if we look forward into the second half of the NBA season, which should start up later this week, what are some top headlines that you're looking forward to in the second half of the season?
First things first, I want to see what Brooklyn's going to do. Can they get everybody in the lineup at the same time? You have the big three who've only played seven games together. James Harden, right in the front of the MVP conversation, has been admirable. Once again, doing everything that he did in Houston, but doing it just as well in Brooklyn. Kyrie Irving, he's been amazing when he's been in the lineup. Now you add Blake Griffin. What's that mix going to look like? And they have two more roster spots. What are they going to do with that roster? Are they going to bring in another big? Are they going to add defense? That's the first thing. Philadelphia, are they going to be able to sustain that number one spot in the Eastern Conference? We know that they're a 500 team away from their home building. At home, they're world beaters. You know, will Joel Embiid get the MVP? He's clearly been, like, motivated this season. Everything's different for him. He's finally put it all together. He's showing the skill. He's showing he has the stamina. He's not getting hurt. Everything is lined up for Philadelphia, but will they be able to sustain that number one spot? So those are my two storylines in the East. Oh, and the Boston Celtics, are they going to make a move? Because they have so much potential with their two young wings. Kemba Walker, one of my favorite point guards ever. What are they going to do? They have a $28 million
trade exemption.
Please, Danny Ainge, you know, please use that. You know, because the NBA is better when the Celtics are good and the Lakers are good. In the Western Conference, Denver, wake up. We're waiting on you to show up. Utah, kind of the same thing as Philadelphia. Will they be able to sustain that number one spot? And, you know, what are the Clippers and Lakers going to do? You know, the Lakers pretty much, from what I've seen, are going to coast through and just, you know, hope AD can get healthy. And I don't really think they care what seed that they get. And the Clippers, everybody remembers that meltdown in the bubble. What you going to do in year two?
So, Ro, I have to ask you, getting back to the Jazz, NBA Jams has been brought up multiple times in this podcast. Did you ever play with the Utah Jazz at all in that game?
Never.
How hard is it to beat them, though?
Well, if you're playing against the CPU, it's next to impossible. So, but now that's when LeBron said that on our air during the draft, everybody bust out laughing, but it's true. I have a homie that is a future Hall of Famer in the NFL. Not going to mention his name because I'm not going to put him out there like that. However, Utah was his team growing up. And it's like, Utah? Really? Not what you expect. A guy that looks like me, his team was Utah. I think you put together what I'm saying. So I texted him as soon as LeBron said that. I was like, yo, your man Bron just went greasy. He's like, don't tell nobody, but I didn't play with Utah either. I was like, bro. So even the biggest Utah fans weren't rocking with Utah in the game.
All right, Ro, I got a kind of a two-part question for you because the NBA trade line deadline looming, we've already seen a big move with Blake Griffin headed to Brooklyn. So who, from a team aspect, is going to be the most active in your opinion? You mentioned the Celtics having that trade exemption. And then who, from a player standpoint, could be on the move come the trade deadline?
I still want to see what's going on with Drummond in Cleveland. He is, you know, uniquely suited with his game to fit in with certain teams because of his rebounding ability. You know, he's a walking double-double. He might get you 20 rebounds on any given night. Not necessarily the threat on offense. However, he, in my opinion, does have value. What is Cleveland going to do? They sat him down, said, you just sit over there in the corner. We're going to figure something out. Cleveland has way too many assets, in my opinion, as far as bigs go right now. You know, you have Drummond. You have Allen that comes over. We're still waiting to see when Kevin Love's going to come back. We've heard Larry Nance Jr. mentioned in trade talk. So they have a lot of assets. How big of a player is Cleveland going to be? Because most likely they're going to be sellers. So I want to see what Cleveland's going to do, first of all, from a team standpoint. I mentioned Boston. They have that money. Please, Danny, do something with it. I want Boston to be competitive. I'm a little biased because I did pick them to go to the finals this year. So there's a little bit of bias in there. So those are pretty much my two biggest storylines. I do want to see the Clippers get a primary ball handler, because love Kawhi, love PG, love Pat Bev, love Lou Will, love, you know, Bobby Shmurda, AKA Man Jackson. But a primary starting caliber ball handler. I don't know if it's going to be Kyle Lowry, if he's available, but I feel like in order for the Clippers to be a true threat, they're going to need somebody to set them up in their offensive sets.
I agree. They need someone to get him into the action and to someone to take the pressure off a little bit, because we saw what happened in the bubble. So you mentioned the Clippers, your buddies Utah Jazz, the Nuggets. Who has the best shot if you could only pick one team today, March 8th, with the rosters? Who has the best shot at dethroning the Lakers and coming out of the West?
Boston's. Oh, out of the West.
Out of the West.
Out of the Western Conference. That's a great question. As currently constructed, depending on how everything matches up, I still like the Clippers as far as matchups just go. They might not match up well against Denver. They might not match up well against Dallas. But as far as that matchup with the Lakers, and then that added motivation that I know Kawhi and PG are going to have going up against their roommates or tenant mates, whatever you want to call it, I still like in a 7-game series in basically the same building, no home court advantage, I still like the Clippers' chances to knock off the Lakers.
All right, Ro, last question before we get in the West Coast swing, and I think you already preempted this answer a little bit. So I'm going to give you your juice back. I'm going to give you your money back on the Celtics because you're like me. Like, I make a bet. I got to run with that team until they lose. Like,
right.
That's where my money's going. So I'm giving you your money back on the Celtics. Look into the future. Tell me who the NBA Finals matchup is going to be with the rosters like Kay Wynn said today, and then predict your winner.
As currently constructed, okay, before I answer this question, is AD healthy or is he not healthy?
100% healthy.
Okay, I just want to make sure we put that out there. So if all teams are 100% healthy as currently constructed, there's going to be nothing better than seeing the Lakers in the finals again, going up against Brooklyn, so many storylines, so many matchup issues, KD against LeBron again. Then you got Kyrie who, him and LeBron, you can say whatever you want. Just everything that would be in that series off the court alone, just the storylines, but then the actual basketball that's going to be played, that's who I would predict. And it's tough to bet against LeBron, but if LeBron has had one item that's kryptonite since he's been in the league, that's KD in the finals. And I'm always going to put money on KD in the finals.
Ooh, I like it. East Coast, West Coast. All right, Ro, as we wrap up, we have the West Coast swing. We've got about 5 questions. There's no right or wrong answers. It's just kind of off the cuff. And it's going to tie into your DJing days.
Let's do it.
The first question, what song best sums up the year of 2020?
Oh, wow. I forgot the artist, but no, that's not the right song. I was about to say Unbelievable, but that's not the right artist. That's not the right song. Okay, I'm just going to say Mystical, his album was called Unpredictable. And I'll just say that. That's not a song per se. I think he did have a song called Unpredictable on that album. So scratch Mystical. We'll just say Jamie Foxx, Unpredictable. He did a song called Unpredictable. We'll call 2020 Unpredictable.
All right, Ro. Are you a Spotify user?
No, I'm not.
Okay. We'll take the question as, what are your top 3 most played songs right now?
Okay. I have iTunes since I'll preface this by saying, since I'm a DJ, there aren't really any music sharing or streaming services that I subscribe to because I have a lot of music and right. I still have access to download plenty of music. So I'll just go to my iTunes, which is right here, and I'll show you my top song. Let's see. Most played. Okay. Most played. Well, we'll start from backwards. Third most played song is Victory by Notorious B.I.G. and Puffy.
Okay.
Number 2 is Hovey Baby by Jay-Z. And number 1 is So What You Saying by EPMD.
Ooh, on the You Gots to Chill album?
So, yeah, that Unfinished Business, actually. So, yeah. Yeah, but not the same. Actually, you got the Chill was on the first album. This was the second one. But that's all time. That's not this year. That's just as long as I've had iTunes. So there's a number of other songs, but those are the most played.
All right. So when the Ro Parrish documentary comes out on Netflix, what song are you leading in with the intro to the movie?
Okay, I'm glad that you asked me that. I actually have a playlist called the Roe Parish movie. And I've already put songs together to go with my soundtrack to my documentary. So the intro is probably a song, I don't know if you guys remember, it's called Boom Diggy by Eric Sermon. I just want the instrumental to play at the end, at the intro of the documentary. There's going to be a portion to where Houdini One Love is played. There's also going to be the second verse of Nas's Represent. And, you know, where he kind of explains how he started. And I used to be a back, I can't even remember the words right now, but back in this day, MC Park. But I was too scared to kick the rhymes in my park, kick the little rhymes because I thought hitters wouldn't understand. But now in every jam, I'm the man. I rap in front of more hitters than in the slave ships. I used to watch chips, now I load Glock clips. But I've rewritten that to kind of fit to how I was, because I was afraid back in the day to step up and get on the turntable to speak in front of people. So that's going to be a part of it. There's a song called Counseling by the Clips. You can look that one up yourself. And the last song, well, there's a number of songs. I don't want to go through all of them, but there's another one called Making a Name for Ourselves by Cannabis and Common. And it's just a lyrical battle between two ridiculously talented MCs.
So, Ro, you went to University of North Texas for broadcasting?
Correct.
And I'm a broadcast major myself. So
I see you represent back.
Yeah, WSU. We had the Edward R. Murrow School. Yeah, Edward R. Murrow School. So we were always trying to be up there in terms of communication schools. But so let me get this straight. You've already scored your movie before you've put it together. So it's kind of like you're going to wrap periods of your life around the music.
No question. I've already planned it out. It's something I thought about a long time ago. There's let's see, how many songs are on? There's 12 songs so far for the documentary/movie.
I love it. All right. If you came out of it, that's something I wouldn't think about. And that's creative. I love it. So if you came out of retirement, brushed off the DJ equipment, ready to go, 2021 NBA championship, Adam Silver says, Ro, I need you to come out and DJ the celebration parties at Encore in Vegas. What are you playing to kick off the DJ set? First song.
So if we're looking to the future, I don't have the song yet. because chances are, so right now it's March. So you have this full month, you have April, you have May, you have June. So the finals happens, you know, July or whatever. So if we're having the championship celebration, something tells me there's going to be something that's hot that comes out between now and then. And that's probably what you want to kick the party off with if you want to set it off the right way. So unfortunately, I'm unable to answer that question because we haven't seen the future yet. Because you always got to be current. You got to keep your ear to the street. You got to know what's popping. You know, Drake's supposed to be coming out with his album. He's probably going to have a summer banger on there. And we know the ladies want to hear Drake. Fellas do too. They might not want to admit it, but that might be the summer joint. And that's how we'll start the party. You know, maybe Hov comes out of retirement and says, oh, I got an album. Beyonce might have a record. Like you never know in the music business, especially like back in the day, you can open the source. On this Tuesday, Wu's dropping next month. Perfect. Oh, Tribe's coming out. Oh, Souls of Mischief. Okay, let me write it down on my calendar so I can, you know, be ready. But now it's like you look up, oh, surprise album, boom. Oh, that's what we're doing? So that's going to be my answer to the question.
All right. So I had to change my next question because it was going to be around New Year's Eve, which is definitely out in the future. Yeah, so we're going to say present. Big Ben, K-Win, we're throwing a vaccine party. Everyone's safe. We'll even do it over Zoom if the people aren't vaccinated. But what song are you playing today to kick off the WST vaccine party?
I'm gonna play Little Duval. I'm living my best life. I'm gonna play the clean version, just so we don't get in any trouble. But if everyone is vaccinated and everyone's feeling good and things are turning around, that means that we all, baby, will be living our absolute best life.
I love it. All right, Ro, last question. We appreciate you taking time to be with WST Podcast. Ro Parrish, you wear a lot of hats, Ro. I think both figuratively and literally throughout your career. Question is, you have to wear only one of those hats, both literally and figuratively. So one hat in the array of hats, I got about, I don't know, 50 hats, 60 hats to wear one hat. And then you have to pick, I guess, one thing you're doing right now to do the rest of your life.
Okay. So a hat that I'm going to wear physically, literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I need my New York Yankee fitted. I need that. That's a go-to that you can, for the most part, pretty much go wrong with. I mean, it's an NY fitted, you know. Mm-hmm. I haven't worn one in so long. So that would be my hat. As far as profession, anything that has a television, put me on that. I love DJing. I stepped away from it for a reason. I love it still. I have my turntables ready to go at any given time. However, that's a young man's game. You can be on television until you're 80 plus, 90, and people are still going to rock with you. You know, shouts out to Larry King. You know, we saw him forever. You know, all these announcers that have been on the air forever. And shouts out to the legendary Ernie Johnson Jr., who's been broadcasting since, you know, basically my entire life. His career has spanned longer than I've been on this planet. And he is still at the top of his game. He is still loved and revered, and he still is sharp as a tack at all times. So I definitely would choose being in front of the camera on somebody's screen.
All right, Ro. As we sign off here, do you want to tell our listeners and fans where they can see you online, hear from you online, follow you?
Everyone gets Turner, right? So TBS, yeah, TNT.
Yeah. Yeah, so the NBA, NBA TV, that's where you can find me periodically during the week, whether it's Game Time, whether it's High Tops. They showed old episodes of me with Shaq and a Fool. You can also see me on the City Game. I think I've hosted just about every program that we have on NBA TV, and it's Ro Parrish on all social handles. If you want to follow, if you don't, we're not really into all that stuff. If you do, you do. If you don't, you don't. That's cool too. But yeah, that's where you can see me. And where else? I can't tell you about that yet, but there's another place you'll be able to see me in probably in about another month or two. I'll be able to talk about it. I'll still be at Turner though, but I'll be somewhere else too.
All right. What about 2K Madden? You got a handle, Twitch, anything like that? No games?
I retired from playing video games. I got to a point to where I just had too many things. We might as well shine together, better now than never. Business before pleasure. Be Diddy in the fam, who you know do it better. Yeah, right, no matter what, we air tight. So if you hear something, make sure you hear it right. Don't make an ass out of yourself. I'm moving, keeps the music. What do you do with I love that record. As we're recording today, March 8th, 2021, that song, Victory, was recorded on March 7th, 1996, two days before Christopher Wallace's untimely demise. That was the last record that he did. In my personal opinion, it is the best song that he's ever done lyrically, as far as what he was saying and how he put things together. And man, that's one of the reasons why that's my favorite record, just because that was his last work. And he literally, his last work, in my opinion, was his best work. So yeah, just a little hip hop nugget in there.
Well, Ro, we'll be watching you. Thanks for your time today. We appreciate WST Podcast with Ro Parrish. It's been wonderful. Thanks for your insight on the NBA, HBCUs, your DJ, your music, your everything, man. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Ro.
Big Ben K-Win, I appreciate y'all for having me, man. Respect and salute.